This is the legendary Tom DeFalco, and you're listening to Amazing Spider Talk.
And welcome to the Amazing Spider Talk. My name is Dan Gavazdin, and I'm the editor of SuperiorSpiderTalk.com.
And I'm Mark Chinacchio, the editor of the Chasing Amazing blog.
Thanks for joining us again for the 13th episode of Amazing Spider Talk. Maybe it's an unlucky episode, Mark?
Oh, I was going to say it's lucky 13, because this is going to be a good one, right?
Oh, yeah, we love this issue. We hope you enjoy this
podcast.
We hope you enjoy this podcast and that it provides an intelligent conversation between two fans and collectors as we hope to look at the Spider-Man comic universe in a bit of a bigger picture.
Yes, and for this episode, we'll be discussing the unlucky Amazing Spider-Man number 13 by Dan Slott and Giuseppe Comincoli, reading your comments, emails, giving away prizes, discussing Spider news, and then concluding with the ongoing series Dan and I have been doing on the Coming Home arc, which is with Amazing Spider-Man Volume 2, Number 34, by J. Michael Straczynski and John Romita Jr.
Of course, if you hear this sound, please check out your iOS device for a link to an article, video, or image to enhance your listening experience. Well, lucky or not, let's talk about it. Amazing Spider-Man Number 13.
Opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment.
Ah, yes, lucky or not, here we come. So Amazing Spider-Man 13. Dan, well, I guess we should back up and say, you know, for those who did not catch the last episode of the podcast, Dan and I were not fans of issue number 12. We kind of turned fast and hard and just on Spider-Verse in general, I know we don't always talk about the crossovers and tie-ins, but I mean, you know, just judging from some of the commentary on each of our respective websites, you know, there seems to be a consensus that Spider-Verse has kind of come off the rails, right, Dan?
Yeah, yeah, or even that the B titles are the better books to be reading.
Yeah, well, right. Although there's some issues with that, we can talk about that in a little bit.
Absolutely.
But here, you know, 13, it was a modest improvement over the previous issue, which isn't really saying that much, because I think the last issue from the both of us probably got one of the lowest scores we've ever given a comic on this episode, on this show. I mean, it's just, there's still just some really inherent problems with Spider-Verse that I don't think Dan Slott has any interest in remedying. Maybe he doesn't see these as problems. Maybe only fans like us see these as problems. I don't know.
But I don't think that that's true. Although I do see all these high review scores on the internet. Although Newsarama turned hard on this issue and gave it a 5 out of 10.
Well, you know, I mean, like, I don't want to wish ill on the book, but it's like, it's kind of, that's actually refreshing to hear. It's like, I'm starting to be like, am I like, you know, when we started this podcast, and I mean, you know, I think a large reason why we kind of sought each other out was because, you know, we wanted, not that we took a positive spin, but, you know, like we were trying to see the big picture and weren't jumping on every single little minor detail as like, and nitpicking it. And, you know, and there wasn't a huge voice for that. And I think that our podcast kind of, you know, attracted like-minded people in terms of like, oh, you know, it's good to hear someone who, you know, is thinks critically, but, you know, is generally likes the comics that they're reading and talking about.
Well,
you know?
We enjoy reading the comic.
Yeah. Well,
at this point, though, I will say, like, if I wasn't so invested, I would probably have dropped this book.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I mean, you know, I've been collecting Spider-Man comics for almost 30 years now. And, you know, like, I'm not going to drop it because it's almost like, it's almost crazy. But, like, you know, like, it's funny. I read this, and we're going to get to the review in a second, guys. I read this blog post once on 13th Dimension. I don't know if you ever read that blog. And the guy was, Dan Greenfield, the guy who writes, is a huge Batman fan. And he kind of talked about, like, you know, the painstaking emotion that goes into dropping a book. And he's like, and basically he's kind of going through what we're going through in that he's like, you know, I'm always going to read the main Batman book because I love Batman. I'm never going to drop it. But he's like, Batman Eternal, which is the weekly series that they're doing, has just completely lost me. He's like, and you know what? I'm just dropping it. And he's like, it's fine. I'm not going to, you know, like there's always this fear that I'm going to miss something or like it's going to get good again and I'm going to miss that. He's like, you know what? I'm not enjoying reading it. It's taking time out of my day from reading other stuff that I want to read. And that's kind of, you know, I found myself like I dropped Spider-Man and X-Men after one issue because that was just a waste of time. You know, probably at the conclusion of Spider-Verse, I might drop some of these spin-off titles. Not that they're bad, but it's like, you know, the investment in it was its connection to the Spider-Man universe, and I'm just not that interested in it right now. I'm more interested in what's going on in Ant-Man and Avengers and Captain Marvel and Miss Marvel, you know what I mean? So, yeah, 13 was a modest improvement, but, you know, Dan, like, I mean, let's start first and foremost. My biggest thing is Peter Parker, 5 issues into Spider-Verse, 13 issues into coming back from the dead. He is still a bystander in his own book. He's passive. He's not a leader. He's not the star of his book. Like, and this is not changing. And I don't know why it's not changing. This is insulting that it's not changing.
And I mean, I haven't read issue 6 obviously yet, you know, of this series. But I have to think Dan Slott's going to try to pull some big thing at the end where Peter gets all the glory and is the linchpin for solving this. And I'm just not going to believe it. Like,
yeah, it's not earned. And, you know, it's like going back to Superior 30, which, you know, at the time was an issue that I liked more than you did. But it's like, you know, as hindsight gets better and better and looking back, I mean, that was systemic of the same issue. Like, it was like there was no build. It just happened. And it's like, this is the triumphant return of this character. And there's been no triumph for this character. There has not been.
Yeah, not at all. And, you know, it started off with us making us think, and I think maybe because we were more positive on this story, because we were giving it the benefit of the doubt that it was going to, like, be the story that earned Peter that spotlight again.
Right.
And you know, once we realized it wasn't the case, you know, it was a hard heel turn, like you said. But even ideas presented in the first issue of this series or even building up to Spider-Verse have been completely dropped. You know, for example, Peter's sexual attraction to Silk. Where is that gone? What happened to that story? And then, you know, am I going to be looking back on that element later and saying, well, wait a second, like what was the deal with the bride, or what was the deal with his attraction to her? Was there something motivating that? And I don't really think anything is ever going to come back around to that. And we'll get to the reveal of what the bride and the Scion and all that stuff means in a minute. But, you know, it's making me look back at the beginning and say, well, that didn't even make any sense.
Yeah, or when it does come back, it's going to come back at a point of convenience where there's not going to be any build or fanfare for it. You know what I mean? Like, that's – I think that's the bigger issue, is that, you know, Dan Slott talks a lot on Twitter about how he plays the long game, you know. He mines things that he wrote 6-7 years ago. And, you know, that's all well and good, but, you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, doing like what Chris Claremont did on X-Men, where, like, you know, every issue felt like it built on the prior and on the dozens that came before it. And, you know, building to something and then leaving it half complete and going to start building something else, and then going back and putting a few more bricks on the other building, and then going back to the other one, and then starting a new building. And that's what Dan Slott does with Spider-Man. That is what he's been doing with Spider-Man. There's nothing gets finished. Everything is this incomplete thoughts.
By that rationale, you know, it's like anything could happen. Like, Alpha could show up the next issue and solve this whole thing. You know, like, and that doesn't mean anything to me at all.
Right.
Like you're saying, there's no emotional connection to that. It's like, oh, I guess that's clever. And half the time it's not even clever.
Right. Right. Well, maybe Clash will be, you know, I feel like Clash kind of took off where Alpha meant to take off.
Yeah. but then, you know, we're saying that this issue is like slightly better than the previous one. And I think the reason that you, and you can back me up on this that it's better than the last one is because it has a couple of interesting character moments in it. But that wasn't even our complaints about the last issue. It's like, oh, here's some okay things that it does better. But all of those core problems that existed last issue are still prevalent here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say, yes, you're right, and you know, and I would just add to what you say. I mean, I think part of the reason why I see this better is I just kind of see this story being a little more coherent. Like, it's like, you know, if someone asks me to, you know, in two paragraphs describe what I just read, I feel like I'd have an easier time of it with Amazing Spider-Man 13 than I did with the last issue, because the last issue was just kind of like cowboy spiders and robots. You know what I mean? Like, that actually
sounds cooler than what I read.
That's true. Whereas this was just, you know, I mean, okay, you know, we learn what's going on with the other, the Scion, the Bride. We get a pep talk with Otto and Uncle Ben. We get, you know, like they're getting ready to fight finally. You know, like, it just, you know, we get some info on the Secret Scrolls, which can I tell you, like, if this is the last Spider-Man story I ever read that says the word Secret Scrolls in it, I'm all the better for it. Like, I just hate this subplot so much. I'm embarrassed that this is a subplot. This is like why I don't like why comics get a bad name with people outside of like the bubble of comic book dumb. Like,
well, it's fan fiction.
Yeah, it is bad fan fiction. It's like Secret Scrolls.
Well, I mean, even more insulting is that they like make reference to something appearing on the second scroll, and they don't even like tell you what it is. So it's like, hey, if you want to find out what's on that second scroll, go buy this other book. And it's like,
right.
What?
Right. And let me just cut in again. Sorry, I know this review is as tangential as this story has been. I saw on Twitter the other day that Dan Slott said that the appropriate reading order, because, you know, we had like, what, four different Spider books drop on Wednesday?
Yeah.
The appropriate reading order is Scarlet Spiders 3, Spider-Woman 3, ASM 13, and then Spider-Verse Team Up. And, like, to me, like, that sentence alone just describes everything that's wrong with this storyline. Like, you know what I mean? Like there shouldn't, like, Even when, like, you know, like when Batman did Court of Owls in 2011, 2012, I mean, like, yeah, it went into the other Bat books, but if you read Batman, you knew what was going on in Court of Owls. You know what I mean?
I read that story and didn't even know there was other stories related to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were other, and you know, in the same vein, Spider Island. You know what I mean? Like, there was no reading order to Spider Island, you know, reading order was.
I wouldn't go that far. There were some reading orders that were presented towards the end with the Venom tie-in.
Yeah, but it wasn't as.
It's not as bad.
It was tied in more gracefully, I think.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like you could have gotten by without reading Venom, because you got to also keep in mind, like. And just again, be kind of scattered about this. When I was reading Spider Island, at that point, I was subscribing to ASM, but I was picking up Venom at the comic book store. So I was getting my ASM like 2 weeks late, and I had no issue. Like, I wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was ahead of the story by reading Venom first.
Well, I mean, but then there's the whole other issue of, like plot beats that are in, the alternate issues that should be in this book or in the other issues where nothing happens. Like Spider-Woman, as charmingly written as I think that book is.
Yeah. There's not a lot going on there.
Well, no, it's a complete rehash of what we found in other books.
Right.
Weeks too late.
Whereas in Scarlet Spider, you know, I was talking about in the last episode about how ASM was in desperate need of a hope spot. And you kind of got that in Scarlet Spiders, you know, like you get the clone factory destroyed and, you know, yes, Ben Reilly sacrificed himself to do that. But, you know, there's the hope spot. But that's not, you know, like we kind of open ASM 13 with a reference to the hope spot. You know, like if you want to find out why you should be hopeful about this story, read this other book. You know what I mean? Like, you know, why they might possibly win this thing, you know, whereas like, you know, something of that magnitude should be happening in the main narrative, don't you think? Or they should at least give it a little more lip service. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the most problematic issue that this release this week is the Spider-Verse team-up issue.
Yeah.
Which had these two stories that I thought were just baffling. For various different reasons. The first one depicts the Spider team recruiting Karn to their team. Like this character that's had all this build in the Superior Spider-Man issues and in Spider-Verse. I mean, like, and by build, I mean, like, he's shown up twice despite seeming to be an important character.
But he was, you know, that B story in Superior was kind of building this character into being someone to pay attention to.
He was the most interesting of the Inheritors.
Right.
Which I just realized, someone let me know about this. I called them the Inquisitors all last episode.
I didn't even notice that. I would have corrected you if I heard you do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened there.
That's true. Okay.
But okay. Well,
Inheritors, we got it.
But
you're bad.
Yeah. So Karn.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
So now are we going to get this dramatic moment in the final issue where Karn like betrays his family and solves this whole thing? Like, who's going to care?
With an asterisk from Nick Lowe to see Spider-Verse Team-Up Issue 3.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, I spent a lot of money on this because I'm, you know, running this site and the podcast. Yeah. And I enjoy reading Spider-Man comics. But it's a $20 a week investment sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, what do they expect everyone to be spending this kind of money? Or they expect us to be like satisfied by an editorial box.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, that. And then on the cover of that issue, there's like this Spider-Girl thing and it's like a surprising reunion, for Spider-Girl. And there's a blacked out figure.
Yeah.
Who is the blacked out figure, Mark? Do you know?
Yeah. I'm like, what reunion was there in that issue?
There wasn't one.
Ah.
At all. It was a her and Uncle Ben moment. But the figure on the cover is like a Spider-Man shaped character. So there you go.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had issues with that, but this isn't the Spider-Verse team up Spider Talk. So well,
anyway, I think it's important that we cover those because that's ridiculous.
No. I mean, in this case, yeah. But I mean, I had issues with the Spider-Girl story, but I mean, in terms of how my issues tie into my issues with Spider-Verse as a whole, not relevant, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. Okay. So more stuff, Peter on the sidelines. So, okay. So we have the clone factory's been destroyed by the clones. We have, you know, the secret scrolls. Jessica Drew is the one who rescues them or who retrieves them. And it's I always say her name wrong. Arya?
No, Corazon? Anya.
Anya. So it's Anya.
Corazon.
Okay. AKA the other Spider Girl, who can read them. So again, Peter is a bystander. Kane becomes the other, goes ballistic, succeeds in killing Solas. And then are we to believe that Kane has bitten the dust?
That's how I read it.
I didn't see that, but I read that in a couple other places. I mean, like, it looked like he was not in good shape, but I didn't see, like, the killing blow. I don't know.
Well, Moreland says, like, we don't need them alive, and then he tears off his arm and plunges the pincer blade through the back of his head. Seems pretty conclusive to me. Although, who knows with the other incident. I mean, like, the way the other works. I mean, does anybody know how this thing works?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
yeah.
like his version of the Hulk. I mean, I thought that sequence was kind of cool. I mean, if that's the way that Kane goes out. I mean, even then, me just uttering the phrase, Kane dying, like, how many times has this guy died now?
Yeah, I mean, he was believed to be dead in Spider Island, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of, like, you know, went into the inferno of the Spider Queen.
And then, no, he wasn't believed to be dead with Spider Island. He was believed to be dead in Grim Hunt.
That's right. Well, whatever. The point is, he doesn't die, but you know, but the Marvel Universe is ending, so I guess they got to get rid of Kane. We'll get to that. Put a pin in that. And then, like, you know what? Like, there was even a scene in this comic where, like, And again, maybe this is a misread on my part, but, like, you know, you have Spider-Man India kind of, like, you know, bemoaning the fact that, like, you know, I'm just a pale imitation of this guy's life. And Spider-Man UK comes over, and I guess, you know, you could say it's just a pep talk, but there's kind of, like, this, like, insinuation, like, no, we're all special, damn it. You know, like, there's not, you know, like, we're all the same.
Well, and, like, Spider-Man India doesn't want to get red-shirted.
Right. But, like, I just kind of feel like the text is even saying, like, there is nothing special about Peter. They're all special. These are all our special little friends. You know what I mean? And I guess if there was actually personality attributed to all these different characters and reasons to care about them, I'd agree with that. But there hasn't been, you know, like, outside of, like, a couple of moments. But, like,
Spider-Man India has basically been reading the series and seeing characters appear only to be slaughtered pages later.
Yeah,
or he's just like, I've hung around. I'm definitely on the chopping block.
Or just to appear at a, you know, just to satisfy the quota of every Spider-Man ever. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's no purpose to it. These aren't characters. They're It's an, you know, I said in one of my reviews recently, this isn't a narrative, it's an exhibition. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, let's just flash stuff on the screen and hope it. And, like, a lot of people got, like, riled up by, like, I guess they felt in my review for ASM 12 that I was dismissive about Spider-Man Japan. Because I got to be honest, I legitimately didn't recognize them. I don't know what that blind spot is, but it's a blind spot. But, like, you know, missing the point of the fact that I was, like, the thing is, they made this big to-do of pages worth of this comic to introduce this character for the first time. We're in the fourth chapter of this comic. And it's not like him showing up did anything for the narrative. It's like he shows up and gets his butt kicked by Moreland. Who cares?
Well, you know what I mean? You know, apparently people do care because Marvel put, like, the first three episodes of his show on their website. And I saw all these people writing about, like, how excited they were to see it. And I'm like, are we really that much of a consumer culture? And the answer is probably yes. But, like, I really just don't care.
No, I mean, or care about it, but, like, care about those shows. Like, it's his appearance in Spider-Verse did nothing for him or the character of the story. So why is that, like... why does the idea of that being a waste of time offend you? Like, it was a waste of time. It didn't do anything. Nothing happened. It's not like he came in and saved the day. He didn't. He got his butt kicked.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Moving on. So,
sorry.
I think the last big scene where Peter is kind of pushed to the background is the last scene of this comic.
Yes.
And it is a pep talk between Spider-Man and the alternate Uncle Ben. Do you want to tell the listeners, maybe people who haven't read the book, what the deal with this alternate Uncle Ben is?
Well, right. So, I mean, and this was teased in the Spider-Verse tie-in. So we're talking the book Spider-Verse, not the storyline Spider-Verse. When, you know, there was an Uncle Ben who went to the exhibition with Peter and got bit by the spider. So he became the Spider-Man, essentially, I mean, more or less, of this universe. And, you know, Ben tells his origin story here. So, and this also put the, talk about much ado about nothing. You know, Uncle Ben is back. No. Uncle Ben, you know, Ben Parker 616 is dead. Still dead from the burglar. But this Ben, I did like the kind of spin on the fact how, like, his nephew, you know, Peter was trying to convince him to go into show business and goof off about it, and he was like, from the get-go, no, I'm going to do the responsible thing. But the what was it, the Emerald Elf or something?
Yeah,
or,
the Emerald Elf.
Not the Green Goblin, because, you know, Norman Osborn would probably sue for copyright infringement.
he would sue over anything, but yes.
Yeah, those Osborns. You can't touch them, trust them and their Tootsie Roll hair.
Right.
He attacks Ben's – he kills Ben's family because he finds his identity, his Spider-Man's identity, and then Ben kind of goes into hiding, makes a deal with Ezekiel, to live in one of his bunkers. And then P.S., while he was stowed away in the bunker, Otto Octavius of this Earth miscalculates and nuked the planet.
Good times.
So, good times. Otto can fail. Otto learns that he failed twice in this book.
Which I thought was an interesting character moment if something was done with it.
Yeah, and there wasn't. Like, you know, yeah, so just to backtrack, Otto discovers in this issue, because Peter recognizes his little digital hologram as Anna Maria, and he's like, "Oh, it's Anna Maria." And Otto puts two and two together, and it's like, "Wait, if he knows Anna Maria, that means he's from the future, which means he won."
Yeah,
and like you would think that would be like a total like dun 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 moment.
Yeah, that's a huge moment. Like, and then you know, it begs more questions. Like, how did he forget about that, or if he didn't forget about that moment or that discovery, then why was he acting that way in the Superior Spider-Man issues?
Yeah,
there's a lot
that
could come out of that, but, you know, it's just kind of a passing thing.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's two ways he could reasonably respond. He could be outraged and riled up, or he could be reflective, but he's neither. He does nothing. Which is disappointing, to say the least. And we kind of from there kind of feed into this big pep talk that he gives, you know, because Peter's trying to convince Ben to put the suit on and come join for the final battle against the Inquisitors. Did you hear what I said there, Dan?
Yes, I did. I'm still just shaking my head that I made that big of a blunder.
That's okay. I thought Kane is still alive, so.
Yeah.
We don't know. He's dead. I didn't see no body.
Yeah, right. Yeah, comic book rules.
Hey. So he gives this big pep talk, and it's kind of like, you know, it's funny, Dan, you and I had like semi-different interpretations of the talk, and you know, after when we talked a little bit beforehand, I kind of see what you're saying. You know, I kind of saw it as like, oh, this sounds like something that Peter would like say to amp himself up, you know, like this, you know, we just need to win once, you know, like, you know, one shot, one win. And
well, yeah, well, for me, yeah. You know, in isolation, I thought this speech was interesting. I don't know that I felt like it match with the character's psychology, whatever the hell that is in these books.
Right.
I mean, adherence to the plot.
Yes.
But I thought that the speech itself was interesting because it's like clear to me. It seemed the kind of speech that Otto Octavius gave himself every time that he lost to Peter. He loses every time, and he just needs to win once. So this is his way of acknowledging his win in, ASM 700. You know, he's lost all those times, but he won once, and that's all that counts because now, you know, he's completely beaten Peter. And I guess if I were, like, going for a no prize and I wanted to make his final speech here to Uncle Ben, make sense psychologically, I'd say, oh, well, he learned that he lost to Peter, but this speech is his way of saying, it's okay, I know that I eventually lose because I won one time and that's all that matters. But that's a dumb response because that's not something Otto would ever say.
And that's not in the text. I mean, I agree with you. That's classic no prizeism there. I mean, you know, and I could see that coming up if other people call certain creators out for that. Although I feel like Dan Slott has done a little less of that lately in terms of like trying to, you know, fend off his detractors.
I saw he's going through like a Twitter rehabilitation right now. He sent a couple tweets about how he's changing his ways. We'll see how long that lasts for, but.
Okay, Dan Slott.
And I'm not even one of the people that pokes fun at him. Like,
No. I mean, and I certainly wouldn't do it via Twitter. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I just sit back and watch the train wreck happening.
Yeah. So it was a nice speech. And it actually kind of reminded me of something that we will be talking about later in the episode from the coming home arc. But yeah, it just didn't feel like it came from somewhere organic. It just kind of like, and again, it wasn't Peter making the speech. It wasn't Peter who got Ben to get up. Like that's like it's freaking Uncle Ben. How is Peter not giving the pep talk?
Well, you know, you think it reflects these issues, that we're going to discuss in a minute, but I actually think it's Dan Slott directly referring back to his previous work in Amazing Spider-Man number 700, where that's the speech that Superior Spider-Man or Otto gives to Uncle Ben is the speech Uncle Ben gave to Peter.
Gives to Peter.
Yeah,
you're right.
The one more time speech, you know.
No, you're right.
You can rest after one more time, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It does. I think what we're ultimately saying is that, you know, one more fight is not a wholly original idea in the world of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of one more times. But I mean, I guess, like I said, I mean, I literally just reread 34 this morning in anticipation for this podcast. And so it's fresh in the mind. Whereas I last read 700, you know, when we talked about it in that one episode, what was that, like 6 months ago? I don't even remember. So... But it still plays, like I said, it still plays into the problem. Peter was passive, and then like, you know, he has this moment where, you know, like Otto goes, the die is cast, huh? You know, and it's like the ha ha, you know, he's still being a supervillain line, and then Peter's like, no, I'm the leader, I say the line, and like my response is, you know, and I won't say the word because I know I don't want to have Dan go bleep it, but that's BS, that's total BS. He's done nothing to exhibit leadership in this entire story.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm almost like, go away, Peter Parker, which is unfortunate because I feel like there are all those people that wrote to us about not enjoying Peter Parker as a character.
Right.
And this is just more fuel for that fire.
Yeah, but like we shouldn't not be enjoying Peter Parker. Like there's nothing wrong with Peter. Like, you know, if you want to turn around and be like, oh, it's the character, that's BS too. You know what I mean? Like this character is just floundering from being – miserably written right now. You know what I mean? Like I honestly think that Dan Slott is more concerned with trying to build up everything else I mean, I don't think it's intentional. Like, you know, like you get these people that are like, oh, they don't like Peter. It's not that. I just think that I think Dan is so caught up in this story and what he's creating that he's almost like, well, I can just put Peter over here and, you know, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Without thinking, no, like, it's still his book. You have to service the main character of your book.
Yeah.
And he's not. He's just not. It's just, you know, hasn't happened in a really long while now. Like, too many issues. Way too many. I mean, predating Spider-Verse, obviously.
Yeah. So, and do you have any thoughts about the art in this book, or are we just going to be repetitive?
If anything, I felt like I almost feel like Camo was trying a little too hard to mimic Wopel here, because I felt like and maybe it was just the coloring, but like, you know, we had this kind of like dark and moody first three issues. Then I think we both kind of talked about how the last one seemed a little brighter.
Yeah.
Wasn't as moody, but I felt this one kind of went back to the moodiness, but it wasn't Quopel's pencils, so it didn't kind of stand up as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, it also gets to another problem with this book. These books is that the majority of these books have just been people in metal rooms having like bicker fights.
Yeah.
And that's kind of mostly what you get here.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, say what you will, but the last issue, at least there were flashy colors and some goofiness with the robot and those big battle splash pages, you know.
I mean, hell, I'm not a huge fan of Greg Land as an artist, but I feel like the Spider-Woman books look a little better now.
I think they're pretty beautiful books.
Yeah. I mean, and my issues with Greg Land stem more from how he draws people who aren't men.
Right.
A.K.A. Yeah. Women.
Yeah. There's that whole moment in Spider-Woman where she gets, like, her dress caught in, like, the ventilation shaft. And, of course, it tears off and we get to see more of her legs. And it's, like, eye roll. Like, literally that's put into the plot. Like, are you kidding me? This is 2015.
But there are well-timed poop jokes in Spider-Woman. And for that, I give it credit.
That is true. A well-timed poop joke is enough to overlook rampant misogyny.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, like, poop jokes are hard to pull off. And I feel like that book pulls off poop jokes.
Could you please put that in your review? I hope that becomes like a pull quote for the front of the comic. Spider-Woman and her amazing assistant, poop joke.
I was going to say, this book pulls off poop jokes.
There you go.
9.8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Can we talk about the editing of all these books? I know we kind of have harped on it before, but Nick Lowe is he's really worrying me as an editor, and I'm at the point of kind of wanting to like put in a vote of no confidence in his editorial abilities. For example, in this the Spider-Verse team-up book, instead of Benji being called Benji, he's referred to as Benny. And that seems like a small thing, except I've reread these books a couple times now in order to write my reviews of them. And I've noticed other problems like this. So, for example, in Scarlet Spiders 3, when Ben is reflecting back on his past and his like role as he became this triumphant Spider-Man, it mentions Captain Stacy's death. But guess whose name is spelled wrong? It's spelled Stacy with an E-Y. That might seem like a small thing. But come on, you know, like it's the little things and the big things about how this whole thing has been handled that is concerning to me about the direction of the character.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to come down on the editor, but like, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, a lot of our issues with this book kind of date back to when Wacker left, Stephen Wacker left.
Yeah.
And, you know, I you know, people, you know, because Wacker would get up there at cons and kind of, you know, play comedian and mock the audience and stuff like that. I mean, I was there in New York when Wacker was running one of the panels, and I laughed, but, you know, like, you're kind of like, all right, you know, like, when you talk about that, you know, are they adversarial towards the fans? You know, Wacker could tap dance on that line, you know, like, and he was a showman, but, you know, he was a damn good editor because he kept that book during Brand New Day coming out 3 times a month.
With some really good stories.
With some good stories. But, like, that book didn't miss a beat in terms of deadlines and just coherence. And you know, you didn't have these kind of, you know, when you're doing 3 books a month, editing issues could become legit, and you didn't. I mean, when he did 52 for DC, same thing. Like, that book didn't miss a beat. Like, it just went every freaking week with 4 different writers. And, like, you know, like, Wacker is a really good editor, and I don't know if, you know, I've never read the X. I really haven't been reading the X books over the last few years. So I don't know what Nick Lowe's prior body of work was, but I mean, like, you know, first we talked about in some of the Spider-Verse team tie-ins about not identifying where they were, who these characters are. And, you know, they finally started to do that. Then there were, like, the Earth designations. They got the Ultimate Earth wrong. Isn't the whole joke, isn't there something in the letters about, like, the Amazing Friends coming back because they gave it the wrong Earth designation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, and look, I'm not sitting there with a, you know, a atlas finding these things for myself. But, you know, people clearly are. And these are, like, becoming mistakes that they just – we didn't have these. And, like, you know, in terms of the, you know, all the flipbacks, I mean, we talked about with the tie-ins with Spider Island, and you're right. You had to, you know, it helped to have read some of them, or at least Venom. But again, I felt like the books were more gracefully connected. There's no grace to this. It's literally just, here's a commercial for this other book. Pay the money and read it, you sap.
I will admit, I do feel like a sap, like buying all these books, and I hate that feeling. And every time that I do, I look over at my Image books and I say, you know what, these are the books I enjoy more.
Yeah.
And I think that that's happening across the line, you know. People are looking more at Image and other places.
There are good Marvel books, but yeah, I mean, yeah, agreed.
Well, we both love Ant-Man. Let's just get that out of the way.
We both love Ant-Man. I like both of the Marvel, in terms of Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel. I think both are really strong. I like Rocket Raccoon a lot. I dropped Guardians because Bendis is just killing me. Sorry. I know you love him on Ultimate. But
I mean, don't you love him on Ultimate?
I do. I love him more in a trade format than I do in a issue by issue format.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, I said in one of my other reviews recently that, like, what this event has taught me is that I am going to be a little more judicious about what I'm buying with Spider-Man's name on it. Like, I need a reason now. Like, I'm going to buy the mini that's coming out in, was it April?
Because Jerry Conway.
Yeah, because Jerry Conway's on it. And I like Jerry Conway, and I like that it's a gang war book, because that's the kind of stuff we haven't written. We haven't been getting gang war stories. And that was Spider-Man's bread and butter. You know, instead it's this, the earth is ending, your wish is dying, everything's superior, every Spider-Man ever. You know, like, how about, like, Kingpin and Hammerhead and frickin' Mr. Negative are all shooting at each other, and Spider-Man's got to make order of it. That's Spider-Man to me.
I have, like, entertained the fantasy that Jerry Conway writes this series and then becomes the lead writer of Spider-Man again.
For the third time?
Yeah. I know that's probably never going to happen, but like
probably not.
I'm a huge fan of that man.
Yeah. So yeah, that I'm going to read, and you know, obviously Spider-Gwen I'm going to read because I thought the tie-in was fantastic, and I thought, and I have a lot of faith in Jason Latour and Robbie Rodriguez, but I have no interest in Silk. I'm not going to read Silk. I why am I going to buy this book?
But you're going to miss out on when she battles Black Cat.
Yeah.
Another character that we really love with her.
Yeah, another character that got massacred.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not buying Silk. I dropped Spider-Man and X-Men because that book was just a waste of time. That's just such a cheap tie-in. And who knows? Maybe that book got pulled together because of Niccolo's X-Men ties. I have no idea. Yeah, and you know, we'll see what comes, you know, out of Secret Wars. I mean, maybe Secret Wars will thin out the line of books. But anyway, let's do a grade, Dan.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about something else.
No, I don't. I mean, I do, but I'm ready to move on.
Yeah.
So my grade, C-.
Same here. C-. See you later.
See you later. Let's talk about your comments and emails.
Okay, everybody. Well, of course, you can find Amazing Spider Talk on iTunes and Stitcher by searching on Amazing Spider Talk or just Spider-Man. We come up pretty quickly. If you find us there, which we hope you do, subscribe to us, rate us, leave us a comment. We'll read that comment on the air, even though certain editors of certain movie pages don't like when we read comments on the air.
See, now I feel bad about that.
And also you can email us at amazingspidertalk@gmail.com. And, you know, if we feel like it, and 99.9% of the time we do, we'll read it and answer a question or offer some commentary or, you know, just say your name on the air. We don't have any comments this week, but we do have an email from Vince, who asks, do you think Spider-Verse will work better when read as a trade? And do you think that writing for the trade spoils some of the pleasures of the month-to-month, or in this case, bi-weekly comic reading experience? Well, why don't you go first, Dan?
Well, I don't think Spider-Verse will read better as a trade. Maybe it will. Maybe it will. I don't think it's going to read well either way at this point, if you can't tell our opinion. But as to the reading for trades, I think it depends on the book. Like, I think Amazing Spider-Man has actually been, like, when it's good, it's been good on an individual issue basis. Ultimate Spider-Man, I agree with you, Mark. I think it's probably better in trades. I'm just not that patient.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The summer that I finally, after you harassed me, read Ultimate, I mean, I queued up my Marvel Unlimited app, and like I plowed through those 160 issues, and I loved almost every one, and I loved it because it was like, you know, when Bendis decompresses a plot, it didn't matter because I could just go to the next issue. The whole series was there. You know what I mean? Like I would read 10 of those comics in a sitting because they read so fast. And you know, I would want to know what happens next and I wouldn't have to wait a month. And then when I started pulling Miles Morales Spider-Man, you know, in April or whenever they relaunched it, like I still really like it. It's a really good book, but like I was finding myself getting really kind of impatient and anxious about the fact that like, wait, that's it. This is where I have to wait for a month. This is the point. You know, like I just wanted to like queue it up in my iPad and finish it. Like it felt like an incomplete story.
Yeah.
Well,
it's funny. I think that era, like when Ultimate Spider-Man started, that was like really the biggest era of trade paperbacks. Like every book was written for a trade.
Yeah. On the flip side, I mean, you commended the Image books. I feel a lot of the Image books are written for trade.
I absolutely agree with you.
Whereas, like, I don't know, like, I feel like there are books that, like Superior Foes. I'm sure it will read great in a trade, but like that, each book had its own. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Yeah, like that book was great, regardless of whether you were reading them one at a time or six at a time. You know what I mean? Like you know, like I wanted to read more, but I always felt satisfied at the end of an issue.
Well, I think one of the distinct advantages that Marvel books have over books like Image is that recap page.
Yep.
Because I find myself picking up, like, I love Invincible, but every time I pick it up, I'm like, and Saga as well. Every time I pick up the individual issue, I'm like thinking to myself, okay, what happened last issue?
Yeah.
Whereas
I got to be honest, all the Image books I read in trade.
Yeah,
I don't buy any Image books, and that's not because I don't like Image. I love Image. It's just like, you know, I have a bookshelf full of Image books, like the actual paperbacks, because that's, you know, that's how I read it.
And I'm thinking about going that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they make it so tempting because, you know, they always sell the first trade for $9.99. They get you on the second, third, and fourth one. They do bump it to $15, but you know, you're like, wow, you know, if I bought each of these issues individually, it would cost me.
Well, it's also nice to know, like, many of those books are going to have a definite end, so you can wait for them to be over and just pick them all up in their hardbacks or something like that. Right. Although Invincible, I don't think is going to have an end. He talks about passing it on to someone else, but I mean, Spider-Man, I'm never going to be able to go, that's the end.
You mean Amazing Spider-Man 700 wasn't the end?
Yeah.
Some people
on the internet were acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else? Anything else on this one, Dan?
No, I mean, I think it depends on the book. That's what I would say to you, Vince.
All right. Thanks, Vince. We appreciate it. We do have one more question, but we're going to save it for the news segment.
Awesome. Well, in the meanwhile, let's talk about the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club.
Stand a little straighter, walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, go for trader, we can show you how to, and when will you be then? You'll belong, you'll belong, you'll belong, you'll belong to the Merry Marble March. March along to the song of the Merry Marble Marching Society. If you groan with the dour sour up, we'll give you howl, if you moan, you can lose your sour crust. I'm keeping trim and in step with the vim and the step of the Merry Marble Marching Society.
Yes, the name of the club I love to say, because we love to get your donations, right? It's the time of the show where we talk about all the people, the wonderful, wonderful, generous people who have decided to donate their money to the show. And they have joined the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club, Spider Member Talk Club Friendly Could.
Well, I love that when people write in to me about this, they like write in with just like the anagram.
Oh, okay.
Like, even they are unwilling to type it out.
I can't do it.
That was close.
Okay. But this week we have no new members, but we want to thank James Winstead again for the continued donations.
Thanks, James.
James, you're the man.
Remember, if you're a member, please check your email for your free comics this week. And if you'd like to become a member of the Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club or FNNSMK, something like that.
Let's see you silent.
And help support the show, please go to our site and click on the giant button that reads Friendly Neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club, Club Only for Members. Why did we name it that, Mark?
To make me say it three times. And I'm not doing it today.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's my new job.
Oh, okay. Why did we name it that? Because that's your joke, Dan. That's why we named it that.
Yeah, I know. I'm so funny.
Well, let's talk about spider news.
We got some big news. Let's dive right in.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any
enemy's eyes, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong?
It's not only big news, Dan. It's the announcement to end all announcements. Secret Wars is going to essentially...
Oh, man!
First of all, before we get to the announcement, I just want to say Secret Wars, the original, is like one of my favorite things ever. Like, that's like my childhood in a 12-issue miniseries.
So while we lament the introduction of all these new characters in Spider-Verse and the clear marketing sales gimmick that it is... You are simultaneously applauding the sales gimmick to begin all sales gimmicks.
Secret Wars action figures. I still got them, baby. I love my Secret Wars.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. Well, true story. They're probably the original action figures are probably lost in my parents' house somewhere. But about 4 or 5 years ago, after hearing me talk about Secret Wars so much, my wife bought me like the run of them.
Oh my
on
goodness.
eBay. Yeah, they're like very heavily used.
was this like a topic of like dinner conversation night after night, and she's like, I just need to buy him these things, so he shuts up.
Well, no joke. So my mom in the kitchen of the home I grew up in has my black Spider-Man Secret Wars figure and like sitting on the window still.
Oh.
And I never ever be like, why? Garden one day and I found
it. Hold on a second. I lost you there.
Okay.
Aaron saying why and then you were gone.
Okay, but you got me again?
Yeah, I got you again.
Aaron was like, wait. My wife was all like, why is that there? And my mother responded, well, I was working in the garden and I found him. Side note, clearly I was reenacting Craven's Last Hunt. buried Spider-Man in the backyard. Left him there to, you know, for vermin to devour. And my mom
rose
rescued
from
him.
His grave.
Yes. He clawed his way out and my mom rescued him. And left him on the windowsill, just kind of as a reminder of what a turd I was. So that kind of initiated the conversation of like, what are these figures? I'm like, oh my God, it's Secret Wars.
I hope that was the tone of voice that this occurred in.
Secret Wars. So, yes, the black suit Spider-Man is one of the figures that I received from my wife.
How sweet.
So. Including Kang the Conqueror. Like, I'm like the only person who likes Kang. I try to, when I do lists for comicbook.com, to work in Kang almost every time I can, just because of his Secret War action figure. Anyway.
You should do a top 10 Secret War action figures.
Ooh. Secret Wars 2015, May. What we learned is the big news is that essentially the Marvel Universe 616 is going to end. It's going to collide with the Ultimate Universe. And everything that remains from this dramatic collision or incursion, as they're calling it, when these worlds are kind of, you know, bumping into each other, these parallel worlds, is going to be found on the new world of Battle World, which is from the original Secret Wars. So that explains a lot of what these teasers were about. You know, renew your vows. We're going to clearly have a married Peter and Mary Jane back in this new world. You know, Planet Hulk and Days of Future Past. I mean, it's going to be from all these various timelines and parallel worlds, and that's what we're going to be left with. I think the analogy that Marvel's editor-in-chief Axel Alonso used, it's like smushing two pizzas together. You know, some toppings are going to fall off, some new toppings are going to appear, and that pizza is what you're going to be left with.
Wait, where are these new toppings appearing from, Mark?
Well, I mean, like, you know, if you had a mushroom pizza and a sausage pizza, you're now going to have a sausage and mushroom pizza.
You're not going to get like olives on there randomly.
No, I don't think you're going to get olives.
It's like the two pepperonis got together, and now there's a sequel, Pepperoni 2.
Back back with a heartburn.
Yeah.
They
released this like giant map of Battleworld. Have you seen this?
Yeah, but what is it like? I keep hearing from people it doesn't load, so I'm afraid to click on it.
Oh, well, it's this like
every
world
time I'm on a site, it's like, okay, yeah.
And it's like geographically, like there's like countries right on this map.
Right.
But each country has like a different story attributed to it, like Age of Ultron or whatever. So like, what is Battleworld going to be? Like every like 100 meters, it's like, this is a universe where Age of Ultron occurs. Now don't step out of our country's border. Like, I don't understand this visual analogy, whatever they're creating. I mean, it just seems bizarre to me.
From the mind of Jonathan Hickman, that's all I can say.
Right. Well, there you go. That enough said.
The dude who brings like who would bring like PowerPoint presentations to the Marvel retreats allegedly.
Yeah.
I mean, people are calling this a reboot. I don't see it as a reboot because, first of all, there's been a ton of new books that have just recently launched or are going to launch, and I don't see female Thor all of a sudden dissolving. I don't see Spider-Gwen being canceled after 3 issues. You know what I mean? Like, or rebooted after 3 issues. There's going to be some things that stick around that are just going to continue as is.
I mean, like, if they reboot the whole Falcon thing as Captain America and Lady Thor as, like, Thor, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'll be the first person to write a think piece about how, like, Marvel is okay with being diverse and representational, but only for a heartbeat. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah, no, it's it, I don't. You the backlash would be strong. I don't see that happening. You know what I likened this to is I kind of see this as what Marvel did with Age of Apocalypse in the 90s when they basically took all the X-Men books and rebooted and just all of a sudden launched new books out of the old ones because they were in this alternative universe, and that lasted for about 4 or 5 months, and then they eventually reverted back. I know you disagree with me on this, Dan. I do think that there's going to be some semblance of reverting back. I think some of the new stuff or the rebooted stuff is going to stick around, but you know, like I don't see Peter Parker 616 being gone forever. I just don't. You know what I mean? Like he's someone I could see reverting back at some point.
Well, I don't like disagree with you. I agree with you on that. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where they all suddenly like wake up and are like, "Oh, that was an interesting thing that happened." You know, like I think it's going. I mean, I hope that it's going to make some semblance of sense about how these things are affecting each other, and. You know, we've got this Spider-Verse story, like, clearing out the herd of Spider-Man characters. Like, I imagine, you know, if I'm trying to imagine what the Marvel editorial staff is doing here, I think it might be their way of simplifying their brand. Like, they're saying, here's all of these universes that we have. Let's throw them together and get rid of them and just come up with what the new status quo is, you know. And we can completely reboot characters and say, oh, they're from a different universe. And boom, that's all the simple things you need to know. This is how this gets. I mean, it sounds more complicated, to be honest. But I think their idea is that they're trying to simplify.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, I definitely do think they want to simplify. But the thing is, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just being naive, but I don't find Marvel's continuity to be all that cumbersome. I mean, yeah, they have these parallel worlds like Ultimate and you know, these other ones like Earth X and crap like that. But like, I don't know. Like I always feel like Marvel has been pretty clear about where the line is drawn on these worlds. You know, it's not like, you know, the big thing with DC and Crisis on the Infinite Earths in the 80s, it was, you know, like there weren't clear lines. Like you would have Batman, the World War II vet, and then you'd have Batman, like the 20-something-year-old fighting the Joker in 1985. You know what I mean? Like that, I mean, that was what was happening. It was crazy. Like they just, there was no consistent, like every writer just had their own version of the character and there was no consistency.
That's true. And maybe I'm not talking about that. I just mean like the difficulty, like based on the history of the characters. I mean, like we're in the middle of Spider-Verse right now. Like,
right. I mean, if
a newcomer
anything,
to Spider-Man, are they going to be able to read that at all?
If anything, I hate to say it, but I could see this also being like Heroes Return or Heroes Reborn. Did you read those in the 90s, Dan?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, but that didn't work. And so we'll see.
I mean it could be their new 52 without losing their history. Like,
yeah.
That's what I think it's going to be. Like, I mean, the new 52 is still confusing with like, what has Batman done? Like, why does he have a son, but still hasn't gone through, you know, he's only met the Joker a couple of times. You know, this is their way to go. Like, some characters will maintain that history and others won't.
Right.
And you don't have to ask questions about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're going to unmarry Reed and Sue Richards if they ever publish a Fantastic Four book again.
And so now we've talked about it before, but like now that this is kind of like approaching us here, I imagine in Spider-Verse 2, the book Spider-Verse, and we're going to have to keep saying that every time we bring it up, get a preview of Renew Your Vows, right?
We get a Spider-Man with a wedding ring on his finger.
Yes, we do. And there's the reference that says, like, we'll be revisiting him soon. So Renew Your Vows seems to me clearly an alternate universe Peter Parker.
Yeah.
I'm excited to read it.
Maybe it's MC2 Peter Parker. He's dead. Well, whatever.
And maybe his daughter has like red hair, and it's not clearly not Spider Girl.
Well, they say it looks like the daughter from One More Day, right?
Correct. I'm excited to read that book because honestly, I always thought that was like a troll of like them going, "I know what you want to read, and this is not what you're going to get."
Yeah, but you know that Dan Slott's going to write it, and not J. Michael Straczynski,
right?
So
right.
But let's get to our question.
Yeah.
We have a question from our good friend Alton LeBrec, and he wants to know, is it considered cheating if Tom Brady asked for balls to be deflated?
That's not what he said. That's not what he said.
I'm sorry, Alton.
That's not what he said.
No. What I meant was, other than Miles and Ultimate Jessica Drew, are there any other elements of Ultimate Universe you would like to see absorbed into 616 during Secret Wars? And I would say, like, I mean, I don't know if I need to see it absorbed, but, like, I mean, obviously Gwen Stacy and without the E and Aunt May, I mean, they're pretty interesting in terms of ultimate characters. I mean, you know, like, I would hate to see them just get thrown in the dumpster, but, I mean, I don't want two Aunt Mays running around the world either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the whole weird thing about this. Like, we just got Ultimate Peter Parker back. And is he just going to die now? Like, are all of these characters we've grown to love over the past, 15, 16 years just going to die? I mean, like, the alternative is that we have two Aunt Mays running around, a Gwen Stacy, two Mary Janes. Like, the supporting cast that I love, is that just it for them?
What cracks me up is that, like, we automatically assume that, like, both Aunt Mays are going to survive the incursion because, you know, if we know anything, Aunt May will live forever.
Right. But, I mean, like, but realistically, do you think Bendis, after all this time with these characters, is just going to go, like, they're dead during this event?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be controversial, and I know you have a different level of emotional attachment to these characters than I do, but, like, I don't know. I feel like Ultimate's kind of run its course. I mean, there's only one book remaining anyway right now, you know, and the two that were with it weren't necessarily great books.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not this thriving universe it was a decade ago, you know? Like, you can thank Ultimatum for really kind of setting it downhill.
Well, I feel like it's as thriving as it was the day that it started. The Ultimate Spider-Man has been the best book in the series since the beginning.
Yeah, but I mean, like Ultimate Fantastic Four and the Ultimates, I mean, they had their fans.
Yeah, I enjoyed a lot of the arcs there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the hugest Ultimates fan, but I understand why people like it. It's just not for me. But
I have no problem with the universe ending. Like, it just seems weird to me that Bendis, with all the love and care he's put into this,
doesn't get
to tie a bow on his universe.
But the same token, I mean, well, yeah, no, I know what you're saying, but I mean, have you kind of noticed that, like, Bendis is not, like, the superstar he was, like, a couple years ago?
Well, sure, and these things happen with comic writers.
No, and that's not a knock on him. I'm just saying, like, he you know, like, you know, in the mid 2000s, he was writing all the big events, and, you know, he's doing Ultimate while doing both Avengers books, Secret Invasion, House of M. You know what I mean? Like, these were all these big things he was doing, and now it's like, you know, they have him on Guardians, which is big for him just because of, although that book isn't like a big seller.
No.
And they kind of like threw him on X-Men, even though he had no experience with it. And I mean, I know you've been reading it with Miles in it. I mean, is it a good book?
I've actually been reading it since the beginning. I enjoyed it for the most part. I think recently it's kind of stumbled a little bit.
Right.
But I've been enjoying the book.
Yeah, I mean, but the point is, like, you know, it's kind of funny that we're in a world right now where an X-Men book isn't like high level, but, you know, like he's kind of like been passed over, I think. So it's like, you know, this is now the world dominated by, like, you know, Jonathan Hickman and Dan Slott and who else?
Shudder. No, I don't mean to pick on Dan Slott, but we've had a year of bad Spider-Man comics, so.
Yeah, yeah. Has been a year. I you know, it's cruel, but yeah, I don't see Bendis getting too tied up. Yeah. I mean, I just think, like, you know, he's had his run, and, you know, maybe this will let him do something else really awesome. Maybe he'll do a creator book at Image or something, you know, like.
Well, back to Alton's question, like, what I want to see come over. It's a tough one to answer because what makes the Ultimate Spider-Man books good, or like to me at least, is that it exists in its own universe. Like, you get your own interpretations of, or reinterpretations of villains and new villains and new stories, and bringing it into the 616 universe, like, are we going to get a bunch of stories of Miles, like, fighting Peter's rogues gallery and, like, and Miles and Peter teaming up? I don't really care for that. Like, it was special when it was Spider-Man, but, you know,
yeah,
I don't want to
no,
see, I don't, it makes him less unique. It makes him less interesting. I mean, I guess if there's one solid thing I could say that I want to see come over, it's Mysterio, because he's the 616 Mysterio, and I want him back in the 616 universe.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and that's kind of a cheat.
Can we get Ultimate Shocker, or did he die in Ultimatum?
No, he didn't. But yeah, I don't know. Like, as a big Ultimate fan, this is not exciting to me. Like, I would actually rather them just end that universe than see them merge.
Yeah, I can see why you would think that, and you're not alone. So.
Well,
anyway, hope we answered your question, Alton. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Deflategate.
Yeah. Yeah. Clearly, neither of us really know what's happening here.
Deflategate. We're talking about when the worlds merge, right?
Like, I mean, but, like, what that means, we're really, you know, not, like, that sure at this point.
Like, Marvel's clearly just letting the air out of the Ultimate Ball for a competitive advantage. It's okay.
Mark.
Alton and I have something going in other social media venues about other things not related to Spider-Man comics, so I'm just ribbing him.
Are you giving us an editor's note to this podcast?
I am. That's Nick Lowe stepping in.
There you go. Well, before you get too far afield, let's talk about a classic comic, Amazing Spider-Man, Volume 2, Number 34.
But what it is something true, made up of these three words that I must say to you. I just call to say I love you. I just call.
Yes, it is the fifth and penultimate chapter of Coming Home. It's kind of funny, you know, we really picked this series well in terms of like the timing of it, in terms of this was six issues and Spider-Verse is six issues. I mean, on the flip side, I feel like, you know, we read Spider-Verse and then we're reading Coming Home and I'm like, oh, I just want the comics to be good like this again.
And it's just getting better each time, whereas the other one, we've got this weird, like, opposite relationship.
Yeah it's like, you know, these are becoming more fun. Like, I want to like jump ahead and like talk to you about the last issue of this arc, but I can't because, you know, we're being true to our word here. This is like, you know, yeah, what you just said in a mouthful, this series gets better and you know, last issue was kind of just one big brawl, although I feel like it was a well-done brawl and with a little bit of nuance to it.
Well, it had a lot of character, you know.
Yeah, and this is kind of a continuation, but it really builds on it. You know what I mean? Like, this is like they take those good character moments from the last issue and then give you even better character moments in this one. Like, you know, the scene towards the very beginning of Moreland holding the child, like, and, you know, right, and you know, go fetch, and Peter monologuing about the rage that he's feeling. It's like, you know, these are the bullies, these are the, you know, the people who have, you know, always tried to shove me down and kick me down, and that's all I feel is rage for this thing right now. And like, you know, I was reading that this morning and like I started to kind of like get a little, my eyes started to well up a little bit. Like, it's such a like powerful emotional scene, you know, like the, like, and like to see Moreland holding a child like that as bait. It's like, you know, like you just, like as a reader, you just feel nothing but contempt for that character and the fact that Peter is unable to convey that. And, you know, it's also good, goes to show, you know, you talk about Peter getting older and can you relate to an older Peter? But I feel like it's moments like this that make him relatable still.
Yeah.
Right.
And that, you know, He's older is what makes it relatable in the first place, because he has the years of history behind him.
Right.
You know, to reflect on, this guy isn't just a villain, he's a bully, you know?
Yeah.
And
but kind of like a special level of bully, you know? Like,
right. Well, a bully, yeah, that's unstoppable.
Right.
Which, you know, bullies, I guess, sometimes feel that way. But, yeah, I mean, so we've got that moment, but then you've got all these wonderful moments. Like, it, to me, this issue is like, the resignation issue and the renewed hope issue. You know, you've got Peter calling his school to arrange that he's out, and the effect that he has, like any good Spider-Man comic, it's about balancing responsibilities. And right now, he's trying to save his life, and he takes the time to call his high school and tell them that he won't be teaching class. And even then, there's a further blow to your gut. The kid that was looking up to him is, like, disappointed in him for not being there. And that's a classic, classic Spider-Man situation.
Oh, yeah. No, that was – I mean, but that's just a great moment of humor. And sadness. And then, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel like all of these moments that you get are just so organic and authentic. And that's where this series kind of just differs from what we've been talking about in the present day. It's like, you know, nothing feels in terms of character wise, feels manufactured. You know what I mean? Like, this all just feels like, yeah, this is what would happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not questioning why the characters are doing and saying the things that they're doing.
And it's smart too.
Yeah.
It's smart too, because it, not only do you get these wonderful moments, like later on, and we'll talk about this in a second, Peter calls the people that he loves to, like, basically get a final word in with them before he's killed. And in that moment, you have this beautiful scene, but, you know, with the hindsight 2020, it's also setting up future storylines for other books. So you can do that in an organic way, you know, and have a really dramatic moment at the same time.
Yeah, no question. I like the arc of Ezekiel in this story, you know, like how he kind of starts out, you know, he's at his board meeting and he starts out with Peter and he's like, no, I can't help you. You're on your own. I have responsibilities, you know, that word, you know, like it's just used to cut like a knife, you know, like I have my responsibilities and can you, you know, Peter will argue with him, but can't necessarily, because, you know, who's he to determine which, you know, whose responsibilities take priority. But then to see, watch Ezekiel kind of come around and realize, no, he's got to help. And I mean, like, it's a good arc. You know what I mean? Like you like to, you know, you talk about those moments, like, we never saw Otto take those moments. You know what I mean? Like he just kind of just started doing things in the last issue of Amazing. But, you know, like JMS kind of keeps checking back and you kind of see the evolution of Ezekiel. Like, you know, he starts out cold and detached and then it's like, you know, he's kind of like lost in his thoughts. And then, you know, that scene where he just shows up, that's a legitimate fist bump. That scene, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, getting back to this decompressed storyline, you know, of Bendis thing, you know, JMS is not afraid to have panels that are quiet and don't have any dialogue in them. And I can't think that that's true of Spider-Verse for a second. And it's those quiet panels that do the most. You know, we see Ezekiel looking out his window as someone, you know, rattles behind him off business numbers. And there's a lot of, you know, like, care and character there that you pick up on when he's not doing something. You know, like, he's thinking. And that invites you into the comic because you're creating Ezekiel's thoughts in your mind. And it makes you an active part and participant of, like, this storytelling.
Yeah. And, I mean, and not for nothing. I mean, this is a comic like this is what demonstrates just how great John Romita Jr. is, because you have these moments of quiet, but because of how effective the art is, it still tells a story even without a lot of words.
Yeah.
And then you get something like the fight scene between Ezekiel, Spider-Man, and Moreland, which kind of like shows like the two spiders in a blur fighting more. And like, it's so dynamic and there's not a single word of text on that, but there's just like this one splash page, it feels like it goes to infinity. You know what I mean? In terms of it conveying its motion and action, you know? And like I cannot think of another artist who has done that on a Spider-Man book recently. I mean, we love Quipel, but I mean, like, you know, and granted, a lot of this has to do with the story itself. I mean, a lot of what Quipel's done has been people standing around in metal boxes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, to kind of like oscillate between quiet and frenzy the way Romita does without it feeling like where did this art come from? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like it's not like he has to change his style. It's clearly the same artist, clearly the same style. It's just, he can just range so, you know, so broadly in terms of what he conveys with his art. It's unbelievable.
So my favorite scene in this book is when Spider-Man – well, first he calls MJ and gets her answering machine, which would hint at the return of MJ in the future. But then he calls Aunt May and basically just says goodbye to her for one last time. Yeah. And even though I know the outcome, every time I read that, like, reading someone's resignation to their fate is just a sad and heartbreaking thing. You know, and it's just handled so well by everybody involved. And you get Aunt May even saying, like, well, I'm going to come over tomorrow and do your laundry for you, and which would then set up her discovery of him as Spider-Man in the issue after the one that finishes up.
Right, yeah.
Storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she makes it – discovery of this issue, and then unfortunately there's the 9/11 issue, and then they actually start.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, that scene is just gut wrenching, like totally gut wrenching. And like, you know, we had talked about a storyline that did this some time ago with the Owl Octopus Wars. There's that like kind of penultimate issue before he goes to fight Doc Ock. But, I mean, you know, no disrespect to Bill Mantlo, but, I mean, like, it just doesn't pack the wallop that that phone call to Aunt May does. I mean, that phone call is just, you know, like you said, it's kind of like someone almost just reading their will aloud, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, so harrowing to hear, to read that.
Yeah. Anything you like you want to talk about?
I've kind of already mentioned the big thing. I mean, yeah, the Aunt May scene, the scene with the child is the scene that got me. I mean, and maybe that's, I think this might be the first time I read this arc in full since I've had my son. So maybe that's why that scene like really stung me more.
Sure.
Than it did the first few times I've read it.
If I have to complain about something in this book, and God knows I like to complain, you know, Spider-Man gets a drop of Moreland's blood so that he can analyze it. But like Moreland, like basically, you know, in the frame of reference of this book, he kills Ezekiel, and then he says he's just going to go and get a cappuccino. And I always thought that that was a little too convenient. It was like, oh, you have Spider-Man nearly dead. Like you're just going to go and take a break now. And basically, like, allows Peter to beat him or, like, get an upper hand by giving him – he doesn't know about the blood, but, like, if he didn't stop, Peter would have had no chance. And I always thought that seemed a little cheap.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Oh, it's a little contrived. I mean
– it's like the Electro battle we got at the beginning of this relaunch where he's like, I'm just going to leave now.
Yeah. Later.
Yeah.
Bye.
And there's that weird Babylon 5 joke towards the end.
Yeah, that's a little. That's yeah, Straczynski worshipping himself, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, granted, this arc is one of the best of Spider-Man ever, but, like, referencing your own stuff.
Yeah, and like, you know, speaking in the context of, you know, I met Straczynski at Comic-Con last year. He gave, like, a talk on writing, and you know, I actually got into it a little bit with him during the Q&A because he told me that blogging is masturbatory. Exactly. I mean, it's Straczynski is just very.
He very, would know because masturbation is one of his favorite hobbies. If this book is any reference to that.
Right. Right. So, I mean, you know, great writer most of the time, but. Joe thinks highly of himself. So yeah, but great story. God,
great,
I love
great
story.
Story. This is like a repeat. Oh boy, we love this.
Yeah. Listen to Spider Talk. The front half, we don't like it. The second half, all I can say is I love this book. do you want to accelerate to the finish line, Dan?
Yep. Of course, all you guys out there in the Spider-Verse, as you will, you can find all of our new Amazing Spider Talk and old Superior Spider Talk podcasts at SuperiorSpiderTalk.com or find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Amazing Spider Talk. We're rapidly approaching our Amazing Spider Talk episodes being nearly the same number as our Superior Spider Talk episodes. We'll reach that point in a few episodes here, Mark.
So what does that mean?
I don't know what it means, but like those people who are having those kind of old, they're like, it should still be Superior Spider Talk. Well, guess what? We're going to be about caught up to that, and time for you to leave that name behind.
We're fast approaching our 2-year anniversary, right?
Yeah, actually we are. That's weird to think about, Mark.
Yeah.
The time has flown.
2 years ago, we were talking about, you know, Superior Spider-Man versus Cardiac.
Yeah.
And, you know, my how times have changed.
Well, you never know. Cardiac could show up. Maybe there's a Cardiac Spider-Man.
There we go.
In the sixth part of the story.
It's the long game, man.
Of course, if you find us on iTunes, you can leave us a rating and a comment and let us know how we're doing, and we'll be sure to read it on the air. And also, I mean, make sure you guys do this. If you have any opinions on these comics or questions, we love getting questions. Email them to us at amazingspidertalk@gmail.com, and we'll address and read those on the air like we did today.
Yeah, and be sure to check out both of our Facebook pages at facebook.com/superiorspidertalk and facebook.com/chasingamazing. Dan posts articles, I post articles, we post news bits. Again, you want to ask a question, I get questions there. I'm sure, Dan, you get some questions. It's a great way to get in touch with us, so check out those two Facebook pages. And again, check out, and if you feel so generous, donate to our friendly neighborhood Spider Talk Members Club and help support our show. Dan, where can we find you online? Well, we still say online?
Yeah, I think that's a thing. Although I read a Google article today about the death of the internet.
So
I don't know what that means, but
it's all going to be SharePoint. Is that what they're saying?
I think the idea is that you won't like go on a web browser anymore. It'll just integrate with your life in every conceivable way.
I look forward to this world.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds terrible. But Microsoft put out that like video. I don't know if you saw this, of their like goggles that like turn every interface and world into like a hologram.
Nice.
And I was like, that's all fine, Microsoft, but like Windows still doesn't work. Like,
no.
When am I going to trust you to do holograms? Anyway, on the internet this week, you can follow me on Twitter at @SupSpiderTalk, or go to my Spider-Man website, SuperiorSpiderTalk.com. This week, we have the reviews of all of this week's books from all of our writers. So if you don't like what I'm saying on here, you can go on there and get an alternate take on the books from all of my writing team. And we have a nice piece from Jala. She wrote about Anna Maria Marconi for our Spy Diversity column, and about how she is a wonderful character and representation for women and little people the world round.
Sounds like good stuff, Dan. I look forward to reading it. You can, of course, find all my stuff at www.chasingamazingblog.com and follow me on Twitter at @ChasingASMblog. And, you know, in terms of Spidey content, well, there's been a ton of new releases, and this one-man army is going to keep at it, but they might be spread out over the next week or two. The most recent installment of my Clone Saga callback ran this past week, Dan. That was the Web of Life story. And I believe we're three chapters into the Clone Saga, and I believe I identified this one as the crack starting the show. So there's only about 30 chapters left. So, but chapter 3, folks.
I'm really glad you're doing this by chapters, because when you first proposed this idea to me,
oh, I couldn't conceivably do it issue by issue.
Yeah,
that would be insane.
He's gonna lose his mind. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only so much like Seward Trainer I can take, but next week, Dan, you and I got something cool coming up, right?
Yeah, we do. We're part of this team of bloggers,
the Super Blog Team Up.
Yep, and like what is it now? 4 times a year, every 3 months we do a team up where we, all the blogs, all these comic book blogs, sync our content. And so this time we're talking about alternate universes, which, like, okay, how appropriate, right?
Yeah.
And so Mark and I are taking sides, and we are talking about Spider-Man Reign, the miniseries from 2011. And I really like the book, and he really doesn't like the book. Isn't that right, Mark?
That's a fair assessment, yeah.
And we're going to come at it from different angles, and well, we're contemplating doing a podcast where we discuss it as well.
Yeah, I mean, let's see what time allows. Hey, I mean, this is going to run next Wednesday, so that's what, about 5 days out from when we're recording this, Dan. So you know, we'll you know, at the very least, we'll certainly acknowledge it on the next Spider Talk podcast that we do that talks about Amazing Spider-Man. But maybe, you know, if you guys want to write in and give us some feedback and weigh in and say who you agree with based on both our pieces, you know, maybe we can use that as a launching point for a really in-depth discussion on the podcast. What do you think about that, Ben?
That sounds great. So, yeah, Spider-Man Reign writings and opinions, that send them to us. That would be really fun. I'd love to know what you guys think. Sometimes I feel like I'm on a little planet by myself in my adoration of that story. Radioactive sperm and all.
Radioactive sperm.
if your post about not liking this is solely just about radioactive sperm, I'm going to be very disappointed in you, Mark.
No, come on. Give me more credit than that. I have about 1,500 words down that, you know, and it's not all just radioactive sperm, radioactive sperm, radioactive sperm. Although that would be funny if I just did that. This is my opinion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, radioactive sperm aside, Mark, do you want to take us home?
Yeah. You know, as Spider Totem Uncle Ben once told me after he, you know, stopped wallowing in his misery of, you know, blowing up the world or being part of a world that blew up with great podcasts, there must also come Amazing Spider-Man.